House Labor and Commerce will now come to order. It's 3:22 p.m. on March 23rd. Present, we have Representative Ledoux, Representative Tilton, Representative Hughes, Representative Culver, Representative Josephson, Representative Keto, and myself, Chair Olson. We do have a quorum to conduct business. Please turn off your cell phones. We have three bills on the calendar today. I believe we're gonna, should be able to, with the will of the committee, move all three of them out today. First one is House Bill 194, AKA Securities Act. We first heard this bill on February 1st, then again on March 14th. At that time, we adopted the CS, which I believe is version E. Today, it's my intention to dispense with committee questions at the beginning, at least, and take public testimony. But first, we're going to have Kevin come up and give us a real brief review of the bill again.
Kevin's on the phone.
Oh, Kevin, you there?
I am. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thanks for joining us today, and please state your name and affiliation for the record.
Thank you. My name is Kevin Anselm. I'm the Director of Banking and Securities. Thank you very much, Chair Olson, for the opportunity to chat a little bit about House Bill 194. Good afternoon, members of the committee. I'm sorry I can't be there with you in person today. What the Alaska Securities Act under House Bill 194 would do is recognize and incorporate current securities industry terms and standards. It would update the law and delete references to notice by telegram and some of the other outdated statutory provisions that we've talked about over the last couple of weeks. It will synthesize the Alaska Securities Act with other states' laws to make it easier for businesses, entrepreneurs, and investors to understand their rights, responsibilities, and opportunities in Alaska. It would open equity crowdfunding opportunities to Alaskans. It would deter investment scams using Alaska entities or harming Alaska investors and enhance penalties against those who do harm Alaskans and treble damages against those who would harm older Alaskans. It would also separate the security statutes from the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, the ANCSA statutes, to reduce confusion and improve understanding of both acts. I'd be pleased to answer any questions that may arise later in the hearing, and thank you.
Any questions for Kevin? Thanks again, Kevin. Members have an amendment in their packet from Representative Ledoux, and if Representative Ledoux could introduce her amendment and describe it for us. You can move chairs if you like, or you can sit where you're at.
I think I'm going to sit where I'm at. Thank you. I move amendment number one. It's on page 34, lines 8 to 9. I'm having problems finding in this huge packet that
and
I have.
And I'll object for purposes of discussion, but I'll also add that the Ledge Legal document is on the flip side of the amendment, and we'll call it amendment number one.
And I wish I could find you. You have a copy of the bill? I can't find anything in my packet right now. Thank you. So it's on page 34. Lines 8 to 9, and what it does is that it means it requires that any action that is known to be contemplated has to be disclosed, not simply by governmental authorities. So if somebody's been talking to an attorney, somebody writes a letter to the entity saying, if you don't do X, Y, or Z, we're going to be filing a lawsuit, that needs to be disclosed.
Kevin, do you have an opinion on the amendment?
To the chair and committee. The amendment would change the model language just a little bit, but one of the issues that Representative Ledoux has pointed out, and aptly so, is that it's not very clear that all potential litigation or pending litigation that hasn't been filed should be noticed. And in the official comments to the Model Act, there is a comment, but it's not in the model language, that says pending litigation can include litigation that has not yet been filed. And so I understand Representative Ledoux's intent here, and I think that what may make the most sense is to then clarify exactly what that means, just as Representative Ledoux explained it, in regulation.
So you can live with it. Is that correct? Or
Yes. No, that's fine.
Thank you. Representative Kito.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think this is for Ms. Anselm. So page 34, if we are deleting the by government entity, so I think that there seemed to be some concern about whether or not the proceeding or action or litigation to be complicated has a directed. So is that proceeding action known to be contemplated by the filer or contemplated by who? So I guess that's the question I have.
Through the chair, Representative Kito, this has been an area that talks about what needs to be disclosed to potential investors. So it really deals with what's in the prospectus or the offering document. So that means that for someone, an issuer, would need to disclose any pending litigation, action, or proceeding to which the issuer is a party and that materially affects the issuer's business or assets, and any litigation, action, or proceeding known to be complicated, and this is where it would change a little bit, would be contemplated by basically anyone. So if the intent is to have any awareness or contemplation of lawsuits disclosed, whether from the government or anyone else.
Follow up. Thank you. So I guess is it assumed then in these situations that an individual will know that some other entity is contemplating? I guess that's kind of a confusing thing for me. I think we can, because of public notice requirements, at least for the governmental authorities, know that there might be something going on. So if a governmental authority is investigating, you might know that they might be contemplating. But for any other private party, I think it might be challenging to identify whether somebody is contemplating some kind of a lawsuit or action in these cases.
To the chair, Representative Kito, I think you're right, and that is true. But there are times when there have been suits contemplated, and all parties know about it. The paperwork just hasn't been filed. And in those cases, it should be disclosed. And I think that's where we're
going
to have to be clear in the regulation.
Well, thank you. So just one last question. You believe that with this language, you can clarify it adequately enough in regulation to be able to make it known who's asking for what?
I think, through the chair, Representative Kito, I think we can. And we'll go back to the official comment that is with the Model Act already. And that basically says pending litigation can include litigation that has not yet been filed.
Okay, thank you.
It goes right to that same section.
Well, with that, I will remove my objection. Are there any further objections to Amendment Number 1? Seeing or hearing none, Amendment Number 1 is adopted. With that, I will open up public testimony. Is there anybody in the room that would care to testify? Seeing none, is there anybody online? Hearing none, we'll close out public testimony. Committee comments. This is way too easy. Hearing none, what are the wishes of the committee?
Mr. Chair, I move CSHB 194 version 29-GH 160/E as amended from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Seeing no opposition, House Bill 194 with attached fiscal notes and one amendment will move out of committee, and we'll take a brief at ease. Item on the calendar today is House Bill 289. Courtney Enright will be presenting it for Representative Ledoux. You want to sit down there too, or do you want to?
I think Courtney can adequately handle things.
We just heard this on Monday. Are there any questions for Ms. Enright on it before we open it up for public testimony? Is there anybody in the room that would care to testify on the bill? Is there anybody online? I'll bring it back to the committee. Yeah, it's not going to happen again this the rest of the session to go this smooth. No committee comments? What are the wishes of the committee?
Mr. Chair, I move HB 289 version 29-LS1367/A from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Seeing no opposition, House Bill 289 will move out of committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note. Brief at ease for bill signing.
Thank you.
On the record, and the last item on the calendar today is House Bill 337. I believe we've heard this several times. As members will recall, on March 9th, we heard it the first time, and then again on the 16th. During that time, we adopted SCS version /H. Today, to present, or to finish off on the bill at least, is Calissa Bailey. Please join us. Thank you. Want to give us just a brief update, and then I'll explain why we took a few extra days.
For the record, this is Calissa Maley, staff to Representative Ledoux. Mr. Chairman, would you like me to just go over the changes in the CS, or just a very brief what the bill does? Okay. House Bill 337 did three things. It established the bonding requirement for marijuana cultivators seeking licensure. In the CS, we changed it from a $5,000 cash bond to the option of either a $5,000 cash bond or a surety bond. The second thing that it does is makes product manufacturers and retailers secondarily liable for taxes. So if they can't prove that taxes were paid, they are responsible for the taxes on them. And the third thing it does is allows the Department of Revenue to assess a tax on plants above the legal limit for people who are not licensed as cultivators. The other change that the CS made was added an immediate effective date, and the reason for that was marijuana licenses are going to be awarded in June, and should the bill pass and be signed shortly thereafter, this would all be in effect before those licenses are awarded.
Representative Joseph.
Thank you. Through the chair, Calissa, right? Okay. And I don't know your last name, so I'm going to call you Calissa. My question is just this. What would it cost to operate from scratch, that is, with possession of nothing, to start with? What would it cost to begin a commercial operation? And assume that we add $5,000 to this. Do you know, by chance, and I'm not going to be tough on you if you don't, because this wasn't your assignment, but if someone wanted to buy the lamps and the other equipment and pay for a license and that sort of thing, how much are they in to get going on this?
Representative Josephson, through the chair, I don't have the answer to that. What I can tell you is licenses haven't even been awarded, so I don't know if people could honestly tell you that to get their licensed business going, that they've made all those investments at all.
Follow up?
Well, I'm wondering if Representative Tilton has any idea.
Actually, I know somebody that, you know, I've got a feeling this might have come before the Department of Revenue, perhaps. Ken Alpert, did you guys ever look at it? Or,
Can I talk from here?
Oh, no, come on up. With all the things they've looked at, I'm guessing they probably have.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Ken Alper, Tax Director, Department of Revenue. And to be honest with you, no, this the cost of startup is really part of the licensing process with the Marijuana Control Board. We don't yet have any fees or financial relationships with any of the potential marijuana taxpayers yet. I could say generally the regs are going to require security cameras and digital recording of the tape from that, and there's lighting requirements. There's definitely going to be a fairly robust startup capital cost for the operators, but I'm not the right person to be telling you about how high that is.
If I may?
Certainly.
For either witness, perhaps I can do it this way. Any fee that the state of Alaska as an entity has imposed thus far is just this $5,000, and everything else is coming through the board? And the reason I'm asking is, presumably at board hearings, people can testify and protect their interests. But I just want to know what our 60 hands have imposed on people. And if it's only $5,000, I'm going to vote for this bill, I think, anyway. But I just want to get a sense of whether we are really creating impediments that were not part of the spirit of the initiative.
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, to the extent anyone's putting fees and costs, it would be coming from the regulatory process, from the MCB. Ms. Franklin might be available to answer with a little bit more detail than I can, but the legislature has not put any direct costs on the industry. The $50 an ounce tax, which is in statute, isn't even the legislature's doing. That came from the vote of the people.
And Cynthia is online. Are you with us, Cynthia?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'm here. Cynthia Franklin from the Alcohol and Marijuana Control Office in Anchorage.
Did you hear Representative Josephson's question? Would you like to repeat
it? Sure, I'll repeat it. Through the chair, Ms. Franklin, John Smith of Anytown, Alaska wants to begin a marijuana commercial business. What would he need in order to start his business? How much money would he need to gather?
Representative Josephson, through the chair, it depends on what type of license he's going to apply for and how elaborate that business model is going to be. But in terms of monies paid to the state of Alaska, the licensing fees right now are set either at $1,000 or $5,000 annually, depending on the type of license applied for. And there is a $1,000 non-refundable application fee that statutorily is required to be shared halves, 500 and 500, with the local government that has jurisdiction over the proposed premises. So if it were in Anchorage, half of the application fee that is non-refundable would be sent to the municipality of Anchorage, and half would be retained by us to cover the cost of processing the license. So that is the extent of the fees required in terms of capital startup. I think that it's already been discussed that it would vary greatly depending on the business model.
Follow up on that?
Certainly.
So, Ms. Franklin, this is very helpful. So what I'm hearing is, under this bill, if somebody had to pay $5,000 cash because they couldn't get a surety bond, and based on the other amounts you've said the Marijuana Board is imposing, the maximum might be in the range of government fees of around $11,000, ballpark, and then any capital costs are just, that's just the nature of the business and good luck and Godspeed kind of thing. Is that where we are?
Representative Josephson, through the chair, correct, except that the $5,000 bond is only imposed on the cultivator because that's where the tax is. So if the application is for a testing facility or any of the other types of marijuana license establishments, the bonding requirement in 337 would not apply to them.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Cynthia. Any further questions while we have her on the line? Yeah, thanks, Ken.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You were here late last night.
As were you, sir.
Any further questions for Ms. Kalisa?
Kalisa, yep.
Kalisa. Silent A. Or none? Question?
Thank you, Chairman Olson. I think Representative Hughes had asked about the difference between it being called a tax or a penalty. In the tax or the penalty on the, when we were talking about, it was a question that was asked a few weeks ago, so why we would call it a tax and not a penalty, and did we get some kind of information on that?
We do. But I think it was addressed on an amendment that wasn't presented.
Okay.
And basically, Conrad Jackson will explain it.
Thank you.
It didn't turn out to be as complicated as what we thought. We didn't achieve the desired results. But
for the record, Conrad Jackson, staff to Representative Olson. Representative Tilton, through the chair, there was a question, as you said, by Representative Hughes regarding calling it a tax as opposed to a fine or a penalty. Some conversations were had with legislative legal. The problem we run into is the tax is assessable immediately without conviction. A fine or a penalty would require charges and conviction. That's not to say, I don't believe it's the sponsor's intent that they would only pay the tax. I'm sure that the Department of Public Safety would prosecute illegal grow operations. This just is a tax prior to paying fine or a penalty. But that memo was not distributed to the members because the amendment, after reviewing the memo, the amendment didn't make sense. So it seemed to take some of the strength out of the bill.
Oh, thank you.
And we could probably ask Cynthia if she's still online, if that is accurate. Are you there, Cynthia?
Mr. Chair, I am still on the line. I'm sorry. I need the question repeated.
You're fading out, but I think the question was if we we tax somebody that, like, for example, the operation down in Homer, that wouldn't preclude you for going after them for additional charges, fines.
Mr. Chair,
fines, for example, for having 1,200 plants or whatever.
Correct, Mr. Chair. The criminal penalties would still apply. The legality of growing, selling, or producing marijuana is carved out through the ballot measure only to those individuals or corporations and entities that have a license. So, if someone's growing without a license, they would fall back under Title 11. And whatever criminal charges would apply could be filed regardless of whether revenue also collected tax from them.
But Director Albert would be able to get his money right up front?
Yes.
He says thank you. Any further questions for Kalisa or Cynthia? Any committee comments? Is there anybody, although I believe we've closed it out, but is there anybody in the room that would care to testify on this bill? Is there anybody online? Back to the committee. Committee comments? Well, I hope one member has a comment.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move CSHB 337 version 29-LS1490/H from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Seeing no opposition, hearing no opposition, House Bill 337 will move out of committee. And as there is no further business before the committee, we will adjourn at 10 minutes to 4:00.